Well, we're back. We're talking with Margie Albrecht about her book, Mindful Relationships. Margie, in your book, one of the things I really like is, that you have exercises for people and things that people can consider as you're going through. What was your hope for this book for readers?
It's a big hope, actually, Dave. We're really hoping that people can realize that mindfulness is, as I said, more of an everyday thing than some kind of weird and wacky thing that you know, is just something for others. We're hoping that mindfulness can actually really impact people's lives and that they can actually recognize through the exercises and the many examples that we've given in the book that there are many things that each person can do to become more mindful in their everyday lives and also to affect the quality of their relationships. I suppose one of the overall aims of the book is to help people have better relationships, both with themselves and with others.
What happens to people's health when they focus on, mindfulness and in improving their relationships?
Oh, people's health improves. Our sense of well-being, our subjective experience of generally feeling a sense of trust and flow and connection in life. I think we all know that makes us feel better. It gives us more energy. We sleep better. It does have a ripple effect, doesn't it? If we're feeling good about our lives, about our relationships, we tend to perform better in work. We tend to be less stressed. We tend to be able to manage more and cope without feeling too overwhelmed. So, the effects are quite far-reaching.
What is, in terms of mindfulness and, the default mode that you talk about in the book, what is, what's going on in our bodies when we're in default mode and what difference can the practice of mindfulness make?
Dave, it's really interesting, I think, for people to actually become aware of this. The research suggests that default mode is actually, we're in it far more than we realize. And what happens when we're in default mode is that we're really just living in the past or the future, often not in the present. And we're in that mind wandering place where we go into automatic pilot. We're reacting. We might read a whole page in a book and be suddenly aware that we didn't actually take any notice of what it was that we actually read, or we get home and we can't remember where we put our keys. And so in that default mode, we tend to not be in this place where we are in a relaxed and calm state. And therefore, our body is more tense and less aware, and we actually, even if we're daydreaming and we're thinking about things that we think make us happy, we're conditioning our brain to stay in this default mode where we're not conscious, not aware of what's happening. And the more we do that, the more we lay down those neural pathways in our brain. So it's actually quite important that we recognize that this is something we can change. We can actually, with practice, get out of the default mode and get back into the present by simply cultivating, bringing our attention and bringing our notice back to what's happening right now.
Margie, I want to ask you, is there any truth to, or maybe I got to put this another way. What, when we become more present, if we take more time to be present, can we get more done or can we get less done in our day?
I think the truth is definitely that we can get more done, although it seems counterintuitive, doesn't it, Dave?
It does.
For a long time, it was pretty trendy and pretty popular to think that we could multitask. And I don't know about the States, but in Australia, it's very much a kind of a cliche that women are great multitaskers and men aren't. But regardless of that, I think the research is really proving now that multitasking just causes us stress. And that we actually, by paying our attention to the present moment, unitasking, if you like, can actually bring a much higher level of capacity, a much greater capacity for creative thinking and for our executive functioning to be online in the body. Our short-term memory improves. All the things that we need, the focus and the attention to actually really achieve and get a lot more done.
How do we practice mindfulness, you know, on a daily basis that, you know, because I'm sure people are listening and saying, you know what, I'm stressed out the way I'm going right now. I'm running hectic, trying to get all these things done. I think that, you know, most people are overwhelmed with the amount of things that they have to do in a certain day, but you're saying slow down and you're going to get more done. How does that work? And what do we need to do to practice mindfulness?
Well, just starting with the intention to practice mindfulness is a great beginning, Dave. And I think one of the first things that we can do is just to think about noticing, just to actually, without judgment, without harshness that we were talking about before, practice noticing when we're in that default mode, noticing when we're not in the present moment, and just gently and with a kind of compassionate and friendly attitude towards our own experience, bringing our attention back into the present. You know, it might be chopping vegetables or it might be performing something very complex. It doesn't matter what it is. Just noticing that my mind is not with me now. I'm not actually focusing on what I'm doing, and just even anchoring in the body, in the presence of the senses, the breath, whatever it is, noticing, bring my attention back right now. And I think most people experience pretty quickly that reduction in stress and overwhelm that you were just referring to by just slowing down and being in that present moment.
And Marjorie, in terms of the relationship, so you're working with people in a relationship, and you talk about that in your book. You talk about intimacy. You talk about different ways that, you know, that people can improve their relationships as a result of mindfulness. How does that work in a big sense? You know, if we're just focused on, you know, what we're doing or what's going on in us at a present moment, and then, you know, how does that work in terms of your practice? What have you seen?
In terms of relationships, Dave, I think one of the best things that I've seen is that when we can tune into our own experience and sense in and notice what's going on with ourselves. And then we're not in that reactive place. Then we're in that place where we can choose our responses. There's a bit of a space that gets created. And when there's that space, we can then have more capacity to have empathy and understanding for what might be going on for this other person that we're relating to. One of the things that does happen in relationships is that we tend to relate to people from a rigid or kind of fixed position of how we have experienced them in the past. We assume things, we have stories in our mind, you know, that he doesn't, she doesn't, he always, she never, whatever it is that we have created a story about in our minds. And when we're practicing mindfulness in our relationships, it helps us to bring curiosity and it helps us to bring the capacity for more spontaneity and just the newness that can arrive, the freshness from sensing into what the other person is experiencing as well as sensing into what we're experiencing, so that we're not going to those automatic triggered places and the places where we're more reactive and not able to really respond in the way that we want to.
So when you're working in tense situations like you do, you know, I'm sure sometimes when people come, you know, for a divorce and they're, you know, fighting about their kids and their finances and all these things, and you know, they're discouraged and they're upset about, you know, the things that have gone on in the relationship. What happens in that sense, and how do you start calming the situation down? How do you move it forward, and what have you seen?
It's interesting, Dave. I think what I do is actually start with myself, a bit like what we're talking about when we help other people to do. So when I'm working with somebody who's in that situation, I'm really trying to be very present and very aware and listen to what their experience is, because when people feel understood, when they feel heard, everything seems to settle. The brain settles, the nervous system settles. I you can almost feel in the room that palpably things have calmed down when people feel heard and listened to and validated. And then, you know, I might ask questions like, what are your values that actually you want to direct this process, or what is it that you would like? How would you like to be acting? What are the kind of results that you would like to achieve at the end, so that people can really sense into their deepest aspirations for what they want to achieve at the end of something. And that can be used then to guide the process. You know, we can come back to think about whether or not we're still working in line with their values and the big goals that they were hoping for when we first started talking.
You know, you're working with families. What happens when children, work with mindfulness? Do they have more difficulty doing it than adults, or do they have less?
Great question, Dave. I think that one of the beauties for mindfulness for children is that if they can see adults practicing it, if they can learn it from an early age, it seems to naturally be there for them, that innate curiosity, that spontaneity. And we can just start with very small practices with children. You know, it might only be 5 minutes a day of a mindfulness meditation that we could do with them. And it doesn't even have to be sort of on the cushion, so to speak, meditation. We can just help kids get into their senses by asking them and being with them and saying, what is it that you're actually experiencing and noticing in your body right now? Or there are many exercises that we talk about in the book as well that, you know, just things like colouring in, mindful colouring, I think has become the latest. It's a big thing in Australia. I'm not sure whether it's so popular here in the States, but just actually noticing the senses of the colours and feeling into their bodies and noticing what's going on for them as they're doing whatever activity it is, playing in the sand or water or, I think mindfulness for kids is so important because it can really help them to actually learn from a young age to not get so caught up in this stressful, busy, sort of pressured life that we adults tend to be in.
Margie, what are some of the take-homes from your book? What are the key themes of the book, and what are the take-homes that people that you'd like people to hear from? You know, our conversation today.
Dave, I guess there's there's lots of attitudes that are involved with mindfulness that are really important, and I think having self-compassion when we just notice that we've gone off track, noticing again that we're in this default place is a really big thing. I suppose one of the biggest things about mindfulness is that it's just about noticing what's going on for us, so that helps us then sense more deeply into what it is that we might be feeling and being able to name that. But also that not only noticing, but that mindfulness is a practice, and that it, like anything we do, the more we practice, the better we get at it. And also that it's linked more easily. It's an easier practice to learn when we sense into our bodies or get out of our heads and our minds by actually sort of linking it with senses, what I see, what I smell, what I feel, taste, touch, that it's a very physical thing, and that actually grounds us in this kind of present moment awareness.
Margie, thanks so much for coming on the show. Where can people get the book, and tell us about the book itself again, what it's called and your publisher?
Thanks, Dave. It's been wonderful to be on the show, and I very much appreciate you having me on the show. The book is called Mindful Relationships. The publisher is Exile, and it's available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble, I think it is, that you have here in the States. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and so they can search for it online or get it at this Barnes & Noble, and also most bookstores should be selling it, and if not, they could always ask their bookseller to get it in.
Marjorie, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave.